Canada, and we are here for you too. Visit neilsquire.ca to learn more.
Broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain, BC, we are CJSF 90.1 FM, and we are diverse, independent, and yours.
Hello and welcome. This is Earth Riot Radio. I'm Reverend Billy, here with Savitri G. On the road in a rock and roll caravan crisscrossing the country, bringing the message of the crisis of the earth to folks in arenas and amphitheaters. That's the whole idea here, is to find new ways to communicate the earth somehow through all the distractions of the distraction industry, the saturation advertising, the wars, the politics, the constant distancing of you and I from the natural world. Even the disasters, even the expressions of storms and wildfires and droughts and starvation, collapsing glaciers, the drama of the earth isn't dramatic enough sometimes to get through how consumers are enveloped in this totalitarian consumerism, we call it. So here's an effort to break through. And as we crisscross the country, well, you can come to our website and get the schedule. We have encountered people in far-flung cities that are listeners to the Earth Riot Radio, and it's very satisfying to get that hug out there in the world. Will someone join me in shouting Earth-a-loo-yah! Conversation with Leonard Peltier. Most of you know Leonard's story, 49 years in maximum federal prison, a political prisoner, never tied to the crimes he was supposed to have committed, but a member of the American Indian Movement and a holder of so much experience, so much wisdom. and a wisdom sharer, as you'll find soon. Because we have questions from this time as he emerges in his new freedom. We have questions about the poisoning of our earth at this moment in our history. Leonard Peltier.
I read a lot of letters that you sent from prison, and I really appreciate all the communicating you did. It helped us out here, you know. Thank you for that. And I know you signed a lot of your letters in the spirit of Crazy Horse, and that wonderful book that Peter Matheson wrote, and I know he was a good friend of yours, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, what do you think the spirit of Crazy Horse is now, like today, and is that accessible to people, and what are the pathways that we can walk on, you know, white people, you know, the descendants of settlers and immigrants?
Yeah, well, let me explain a little bit about Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse was a very spiritual person, first of all. People got to understand his father was a spiritual leader, a medicine man, and he was raised that way. But he was also a phenomenal warrior, and it just came natural with him. And this was his teachings. He taught us that we have to try to protect our mother, our earth, our culture, and which is part of our culture and our religion. We have to. And he became a very, very famous and loved. He was well loved by the people, and he's still loved today. We're building a monument. I mean, it's going to be the biggest monument in the world. It's called Crazy Horse Monument. People should go out there and see that.
Yeah. We've been there.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Okay.
Yeah. So you see, this is the love that we have for this man. And we believed in his ideology and his way he carried himself. So we try to teach the young that it's not just going out being a warrior. A warrior means many different things besides just going out and killing your enemy or killing anything. You have to carry yourself with respect and love and kindness and to be a good warrior. And from the history we got of Crazy Horse, that's what we heard about him. That's what the story is told about him. And so that's why we say in the spirit of Crazy Horse, we want people to go to have the same kind of spirit he had. And that's the spirit of Crazy Horse.
Much respect. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about the women of AIM and how women were part of that movement and the ways that they showed up.
Well, as you know, the history of the, you know, I've got to say this, but the history of the Europeans for women was horrible. I mean, it was brutal. It was evil. That's all there is to it. White women were treated evil, evil. They brought that with them. And they started to indoctrinate our people with them same type of feelings. Well, we start changing that in the American Indian movement because we heard the history from our clans mothers. And, you know, some tribes, the clans mother was the only one that could approve a war or declare war. And usually they wouldn't declare war because it was a bunch of nonsense reasons. They would, their philosophy was, we can't give this power to the young guys because they're too bullheaded and they want to go ahead and start earning their feathers and all this other stuff. So they have to take over. And this is all true our history. If you go back and go back to our history, most tribes. All right. So we come into the 60s and 70s, and our people had been adopting a lot of the European ways. And one of them was to not take that power away from the women. And we started reversing that. We started reversing just what I was telling you about. Those were our teachings. And we turned around and started giving our women more power. And our women do have more power today because of our teachings in the 60s and 70s and 80s. That's what we did. We started reversing that. There's still a lot of ways to go. There's still a ways to go, but you know, when the Europeans came here, they captured our women and they enslaved them, prostituted them, sold them into slavery. I mean, did everything they were doing to their own. So they were brutalized. So there was the children. The children were captured at a young age, branded in the face to traumatize them, and they were sold into slavery. We were the first slaves here in America and the islands and stuff like this. Uh-huh. And it couldn't work for them because our teaching was if you're captured by somebody, it was your duty to not only escape, but if you had to, take his life, take their life. And that's what they were doing with the slave masters back in the 1500s.
Well, in the last decades, it's been largely the women's voices somehow that we've found here in New York City, like LaDonna Brave Bull Allard and Cheryl Angel and Deborah White Plume and Winona LaDuke. The wise women, their voices came through. Occupy Wall Street and Standing Rock.
Yeah. Back in the days, in our days, some of them women were the leaders of the tribe. Back east, you go to look at some of the history in the back east, or some of them tribes have disappeared, unfortunately. But their leadership was women. They're women. The women ran that. Well, they didn't have no male chiefs. They had women. I mean, it's well-written history. You know, people should understand, too, that, you know, they portrayed us as savages. That we had no religion, we had no politics, and our women was treated bad and all this stuff. That's not true. We built monuments here, monuments that are still standing. Still, people go and visit these monuments regular. Clear up into California, Colorado, New Mexico, and all those places. The savages don't build monuments. We had the best health service, system in the world. There was nobody sick over here. Nah, over in Europe, what they had plague over there, over 150 million people died. We didn't have that over here. And here's another thing. We've been covering this for about 50 years now. Some of our people were studying and practicing brain surgery. The one that you get hit in the head, you got blood in your brain, and you have to drain that blood out. Well, if you drill a hole in your head to drain that blood out, that's brain surgery. You're missing a man's brain, or a woman's brain. You're missing a human's brain. So that's brain surgery. And that's all recorded now. They teach that in medical school. All right. And we had agriculture. We had the best agriculture in the world. All the potatoes and corns and all these other vegetables you get on your table today, we domesticated that hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago. So we had the best agricultural system in the world. So we weren't savages. We had villages. We had cities. You know, but they came in and this. 500 years of total destruction of our culture and our religion, languages, just about everything possible that we were. And the American Indian movement and us, we fought that, but we fought back on it. But,
yes.
And we fought back and we're bringing it back now. I am shocked at the large amount of people I've seen at these Sundances, other gatherings. These kids are more militant than we were. And they said we're a very violent, militant group. But these kids, I can't believe, they'd be cursing right through. I seen this video I seen this video on the Arizona border. I think some ISIS pulled these young girls over, Navajo girl. I think they were Navajo. Then they, and boy, they got a big curse. They got a good cursing out from these kids. You know, yeah. They were used throwing the word "can kiss my" some words papers. I shit. I cracked up and I said, I knew there were young girls that could tell by their voices. Who the hell are you to stop me on my land? Go back to your own goddamn land, your own country.
As a new generation coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in my lifetime, it's remarkable to witness and the growing indigenous leadership in lots of different movements, but especially around the environment. And I just wonder if you want to reflect on that a little bit. Like,
again, that was part of AIM's teachings, is that first learn your culture, learn your language, bring that, because remember, they spent centuries trying to take the Indian out of the Indian, and one of them was denying our religion, our culture, our languages, and everything else like this, right? They in schools, boarding schools, they beat it out of us. So we reversed that. We were encouraging our people to just learn your languages first, learn your culture first, and learn what we call the white man's education too. You've got to know your enemy. You have to. This is the teachings from our elders. You have to get that education. You have to know who your enemy is. And so we got, now we got professors, we got more than we had back in my day or 50 years ago. I mean, we got these kids coming out of these schools, top students. I got a little granddaughter, great granddaughter. She's a top swimmer, fly swimmer, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
She's a mathematician, how do you say that word?
Oh, a mathematician, yeah.
And she's taking up violin, she's taking up kayaking, she's taking up all kinds of, and she's only 11 years old. I am so proud of her. She's not the only one either. Some of the other ones are graduating at 16 from high school, so going into college. So I'm proud of these kids.
Hello, welcome to News from the Natural World. I'm Savitri D. Extreme heat is breaking temperature records across Europe and driving bigger and stronger wildfires. France, Croatia, Hungary, Italy, Greece, and Spain are all experiencing record temperatures as much as 12 degrees Celsius above the average. Beyond Europe, dozens of temperature records were broken across Canada, and record-breaking heat above 50 degrees Celsius in Iraq was blamed for a nationwide blackout. The heat wave in southern Europe comes as Nordic countries recover from unprecedented temperatures above 30 degrees Celsius in the Arctic Circle this month. Wildfires in Europe have burned more than 400,000 hectares so far this year. Natural interbreeding in the wild between tomato plants and potato-like species from South America about 9 million years ago gave rise to the modern-day potato. After diverging for about 5 million years, the two species were able to interbreed and gave rise to the earliest potato plants with tubers around 9 million years ago. In addition to being more resilient, the formation of the tuber allows potato plants to reproduce without seeds or pollination. They grow new plants by simply sprouting from buds on the tuber. Slicing, chopping, and bite and cut marks on human remains from 5,700 years ago suggests that cannibalism may have been a common practice among our Neolithic ancestors. Scientists studied more than 600 bones and fragments from 11 well-preserved skeletons of adults, adolescents, and children. They were found in El Mirador Cave in the Atapuerca Mountains of Spain and date to the late Neolithic period. Microscopy analysis revealed signs of cannibalism on all of the bones studied. Specifically, the researchers noted signs of butchery on 69 bones and chop marks on several others, indicating that skin and muscle had been sliced off. Some bones were translucent with slightly rounded edges, suggesting they had been boiled. Further evidence includes some of the larger bones being cracked open, most likely to get at the marrow. According to the scientists, cannibalism took place after death. The bodies were skinned, and their limbs were separated before being cooked and eaten, possibly over a few days. Talks on the world's first legally binding treaty to end plastic pollution have stalled just one day before the negotiations are due to end. Some of the countries calling for an ambitious treaty to include targets to reduce plastic production, including Colombia, the EU, and the UK, have rejected as unacceptable and unambitious a draft treaty text that does not include production caps nor address chemicals used in plastic products. Oil and plastic-producing nations, including Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Iran, the like-minded group, which has reportedly been supported by the U.S. as well as the chemical industry, reject production limits and instead want the treaty to focus on measures such as waste management and recycling. Almost 100 countries, including Australia, Canada, Mexico, and many African and Pacific nations, have called for the adoption of legally binding measures to limit plastic production in order to address plastic at source. Many have said toxic chemicals and plastics need to be controlled. There's a thriving community of diverse microbes living in tree wood, according to a new study led by Yale. A single tree hosts about 1 trillion bacteria in its woody tissue. Trees are Earth's largest biomass reservoir and store more than 300 gigatons of carbon. However, what is living in their wood has largely been unexplored. Scientists found that microbes are partitioned between heartwood, or inner wood, and sapwood, or outer wood, with each having its own unique microbiomes with minimal similarity to other plant tissues or ecosystem components. Inner wood is dominated by microbes that don't need oxygen, while outer wood is dominated by microbes that do require oxygen. The microbes are actively producing gases and cycling nutrients. The team spent over a year freezing, smashing, grinding, and beating wood samples to develop a method that could provide the high-quality DNA required to uncover the microbiomes in the tree trunks. In California, wild pig's flesh is turning neon blue. The startling find of wild pigs with bright blue tissue in Monterey County suggests that wild animals have been exposed to the anticoagulant rodenticide difascinone, a popular poison used by farmers and agriculture companies to control the population of rats, mice, squirrels, and other small animals. Officials are urging hunters not to consume any meat from an animal with signs of the blue pigmentation in their meat or fat. The distorted sound of the early universe suggests we are living in a giant void. Fungi play crucial roles in supporting plant life. Their ability to form connections between plant roots can enhance water and nutrient uptake and promote plant growth. And now, the sounds of extinction. Connectedness. Over the past 220 years, the connection between people and nature has declined by more than 60%, a key finding of a study led by Miles Richardson, a professor of nature connectedness. Losing touch with nature is increasingly recognized as a contributing factor to the environmental crisis. When people feel disconnected from the natural world, they are less likely to protect it. Richardson and colleagues developed a novel computer model using historical data on urban growth. This model helped them understand how urbanization, engagement with nature, and beliefs and habits passed down from parents to children have shaped our connectedness to nature over time. Their research also notes the decreasing frequency of nature words such as river, blossom, and moss over the last 2 centuries. In other words, the language we use reflects a growing disengagement with the natural world. Their modeling predicts an extinction of experience, where future generations lose their connection with the natural environment because of built-up neighborhoods and parents not passing on an appreciation for nature. Even major initiatives to add green spaces and encourage people to spend more time outdoors probably won't reverse the trend. Richardson highlights the scale of interventions needed to make a difference. Cities would have to become 10 times greener than they are today.
coming.
Liberate.
We got to move on through.
Liberate.
Past two weeks, shot a chain.
Liberate.
There's still me and you.
Liberate.
See what you see.
Liberate.
Believe your own eyes.
Liberate.
That's a real war going on.
Liberate.
And those are real cries. Liberate.
La, 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 liberate. La, 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 liberate. La, 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 liberate. La, 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 liberate.
See what you see.
Liberate.
Believe your own eyes.
Liberate.
That's a real war going on.
Liberate.
Those are real cries.
Months of record heat, month after month. Anybody heard things like, well, that was the hottest July in 150,000 years. That's the kind of thing that's going on, and it's real. It's real. We are actually in some kind of meta crisis, world on fire, sixth extinction. Well, you know what? There's one reason for this extreme danger, this crisis. Billionaires are poisoning the earth. They're putting toxicity into the air and the water and the soil, and there's only one way to stop them. It hasn't been politicians, it hasn't been any organization. It's just gotta be you and me. Mm-hmm. It's gotta be us.
Yeah.
We gotta do this together.
Yes, sir.
We gotta do this together. It's human beings saving life, saving the more than human life, saving all life that in turn saves us. In other words, the earth is saving the earth. We got to join the earth. That's what we're doing now. That's why we say Earthalleluia. We are the earth. We're calling out to Mother Earth. We want to help you. Earthalleluia. But you know what? This is a big change for us. This is such a basic change. It's going to be so different doing it ourselves, not depending on some organization. It's us.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC, Canada.
Starting from the week of Monday, May 30th, the Student Union Building is open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. The sub-building common spaces, along with the bookable spaces, are available for use. Any comments or questions, please go to the Simon Fraser Student Society website at sfss.ca for more information.